What if paradise isn't waiting for us after death, but something we could build together right now? Adrian Shirk's journey through America's utopian experiments suggests exactly this radical possibility. From abandoned communes to thriving intentional communities, she explores how people have tried to create heaven on earth throughout American history. These weren't just idealistic dreamers, but practical visionaries responding to specific crises, economic collapse, war, social upheaval, by building working prototypes of better societies. What makes this exploration so compelling is how deeply personal it becomes. As Shirk's own life unravels under the weight of caregiving responsibilities and isolation, her research transforms from academic interest to existential lifeline. The question becomes not just theoretical, but urgent. How might we live differently, more humanely, more connected to each other? And what keeps us from creating the communities we desperately need? Utopia exists in the tension between imagination and reality, reimagining time while creating alternatives in the present. When utopian experiments remain flexible to human needs rather than rigid ideals, they thrive. Successful utopian communities demonstrate that seemingly impossible social arrangements can work. Shakers achieving gender equality in the 1700s, integrated communities during Jim Crow, and economic democracies producing abundance without exploitation. These experiments challenge our fundamental assumptions about human nature. Alongside committed utopians are utopian groupies, those who deeply desire to remake the world but lack the conviction to commit to one community. Unlike those dedicated to daily paradise building, groupies remain uncertain while harboring even greater utopian hopes. Their vocation is hope itself, endless and shifting. These seekers circle intentional communities, documenting experiments. Some become unofficial historians, recording triumphs and failures, while others translate radical social experiments for mainstream understanding. Shirk counts herself among these groupies, dreaming of escape while constrained by practical questions. Where would we work? Who would join? Where's the money? How do we care for each other in a society designed for isolation? This question becomes painfully personal when Shirk and her husband Sweeney become full-time caregivers for his father after devastating strokes. Their dreams of an open home filled with friends collapse under relentless medical routines. The isolation becomes suffocating. While friends gather with chosen families during holidays, they remain tethered to medical schedules in a neighborhood that feels increasingly prison-like. Looking at leafless trees on their desolate street one winter, Shirk realizes, this is hell. During a rare escape to Brooklyn during a snowstorm, she struggles to articulate her deeper needs, space to write, time to breathe, possibility of joy. When forced to envision their future, she's startled to mentally refer to Sweeney as my first husband, a subconscious admission their paths may diverge. This experience reveals the profound limitations of the nuclear family. Two people cannot meet all each other's needs, especially in crisis. This drives Shirk to study communities that blur boundaries between public and private spheres, redefining family and care based on Acts 2:42 through 47, where the early church shared all possessions. The Bruderhof movement began in 1920 when Eberhard and Emmy Arnold established their first community in post-World I Germany, attracting war veterans, anarchists, single mothers, students, and spiritual seekers. After fleeing Nazi Germany, the community migrated through Liechtenstein in England before settling in Paraguay, displacements that shaped their distinctive identity, blending German intellectual traditions with practical communal living. Today's Bruderhof communities in rural New York and Pennsylvania operate successful enterprises. Community Playthings produces wooden toys and school furniture, while Rifton Equipment creates adaptive equipment for people with disabilities. Members rotate through manufacturing, childcare, and agricultural work. During her visit to Fox Hill Bruderhof, Shirk discovers an extensive network connecting various intentional communities that transcends theological differences, revealing a vibrant ecosystem of alternative living experiments. The experience prompts her to reconsider whether artistic pursuits and community living are truly incompatible. How does race shape which utopian visions are allowed to flourish? The Simple Way community in North Philadelphia shows how deindustrialization transformed once integrated factory neighborhoods. Before factories closed, residents accessed everything within blocks, a design both feudal and communal compared to today's high-tech atomization of nuclear family careerism. MOVE, another Philadelphia community, faced a drastically different fate. Founded in 1972 as an anarcho-primitivist black liberation group, they were violently targeted despite seeking only to be left alone. After a 1978 standoff imprisoned 9 members, police dropped a military-grade explosive on their West Philadelphia row house in 1985, killing 11 members, including 5 children, and destroying 60 homes. This contrast reveals how whiteness provides protective invisibility, while blackness invites hypervisibility as a threat. Similarly, Soul City, a 1969 black-led multiracial community on former plantation land, initially received HUD funding but faced hostility when it became clear this wasn't just political theater. Though funding was eventually pulled, leading to bankruptcy, 30 families lived there for years in multiracial harmony. After years of research and personal struggle, Shirk and Sweeney retreat to the Catskills, initially staying at a mountain retreat called Frank's Place. With friends' help, they convert a nearby hunting cabin into the Commie Cabin, with evenings often spent around bonfires. The area has rich history. Nearby is the Zone, a former Jewish girls' camp from the Catskills' Borscht Belt era, when Jewish summer retreats flourished from the 1930s-60s, offering leisure without anti-Semitism before declining with increased air travel and assimilation. A medical malpractice settlement allows them to purchase a 5-bedroom 1860s farmhouse on 64 acres with forest, pasture, orchards, and spring-fed ponds for $282,000. They transform the property into a residency space, hosting leftist thinkers through winter. By December 2019, they established the Mutual Aid Society, a self-sustaining residency program for organizers, artists, and scholars, while allocating land for friends' homes. Guests stay 2 to 4 weeks, with modest financial contributions requested but waived when needed. When COVID-19 hits, Shirk and friends form the Mutual Aid Society to combat isolation. Their commune develops a rhythm. Mornings for coffee and writing, shared meals, afternoons teaching and foraging, evenings for revision or communal activities. The experiment thrives. People create books, furniture, plant medicine, and share nightly dinners. Shirk discovers freedom in community, no longer bearing sole responsibility. She notices how women transform group dynamics. Needs are efficiently met, discussions become democratic. The women wake asking, "What do I want to do today?" and follow through, a historically significant freedom. Through communal living, Shirk realizes that impossible things happen all the time. At her father-in-law's funeral on New Year's Eve 2020, standing with friends as Danny Boy plays, she reflects on heartbreak and Chesterton's observation about God's unshown mirth. Though sharing neither blood nor legal ties, they are strangers and pilgrims on a common path. Her journey reveals utopia isn't a perfect endpoint, but a process, heaven found in moments of connection and shared purpose.